Okay, well. Okay, I'm glad I asked William Ray and Jason Puberko. Okay. I will call first on Roger Larson, representing Happy Acres. Pollution of Stemple Creek via landfill. My understanding is he's requested 5 minutes, and that the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency desires the right to respond. If I grant you five, I'm going to grant them five, and then keep everything else at three. Sure. Okay.
Yep. I have a video that I'd like to play for you. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Roger Larson. I live in, and I'm representing Happy Acres. Is this the mouse?
The mouse is yellow, but you can
Oh, there you go. This is a, well, this pretty much speaks for itself. So this is at Hamill Road and a pond down at the bottom of the hill at Hamill Road. So there's Hamill and Meacham. There's the containment pond, all that water spewing out of there. Wow, it's coming out fast. And going right down the drain, across the road, into the creek. I think this is not zero discharge, and I'm pretty sure that's not what they had in mind. So, up here's the pit for the leachate. This water, we're not sure. I think it's runoff from around the landfill. It goes under the road here, across the street, down to this gully, right into the belly of those cows. I'm hoping I'm not drinking this milk tomorrow. Video's running a little. So that's the pond that's draining from the landfill runoff. That's just a. This is 24 hours later.
A lot of water still flying out of there.
So this water that you see running is running across this farmer's driveway, and it's coming from the landfill slash composting site.
That was 24 hours later. It's 3 days. Still running after 3 days.
Yeah, this is Monday morning. This is the spot where the up by the leachate pond.
I'm fascinated with watching the water run, so I'll cut it short there. So a week later, this is a picture of the hay bales that they set up for collecting sediments. Those are the hay bales. That video didn't turn out. This one. This is the upper pond, and that's the secondary pond. There's no water in it. It was a week later. Where did all that water go? This is actually a better video. It looks like it didn't turn out, of the water that's still leaking out of that creek. So in the spring of 2013, there was a zero discharge permit issued to the county for the central landfill. That order asked for a plan to be compliant to zero discharge by May of 2013. On very nearly the last day of the allotted time, Sonoma County Waste Management Agency sent a plan to do exactly what they'd been doing for the last however many years: throw wattles in front of the compost piles, build those catch basins, and continue to dump the runoff water down Stemple Creek. I'm out of the loop as far as the letters back and forth from Water Control Board to Sonoma County Waste Management. So this is information that I'm told or my own observances. So the control board responded that no, that's not a good plan. And months go by, another plan comes back to you guys from Sonoma County Waste Agency, which says they'll collect 250,000 gallons of first flush with those hay bale catch basins and tanks, and then dump the runoff to Stemple Creek. At the next meeting, at the meeting of the JPA board, after that plan has passed through everybody's hands, the cost for renting or buying the tank holds up any implementation of the plan. So I was talking to someone down here last week, and they told me that the first flush tanks weren't going to happen, but they were going to be digging another pond. So basically, there's really not ever been a plan. It's been a year. There's still not any plan in place to do anything about this kind of gross pollution. What these videos don't show, what's shown in the video I've taken is the overflow from the primary pond to the second pond. That water was roiling up, and black bacteria-infested water was just roiling up around the inlet pipe. It was incredible to see. The water makes that 20-foot drop into a submerged pipe onto the bottom of the pond, and everything is mixed. Mud from every other rain that's happened and deposited solids into that shallow pond. It looked like a pot of black boiling water. The catch basins were so full of water, the water no longer ran into them, but bypassed them or just ran over the hay bales completely. I wish those videos had come out as evidence of the nonchalant attitude for the massive pollution this facility has perpetrated for decades. Anyone looking at those hay bales, that black roiling water, or the outflow from the tertiary pond on Hamill Road for 3 days could not in good conscience let this pollution go on. I go to the Sonoma County Waste Management meetings, and in my view, the general consensus is to do nothing, to delay, or even prevent action from being taken. Well, they make a plan, and another plan, and another plan, and the results of all this plan can be seen in this video. All the plans would do little to nothing to stop the poisoning of Stemple Creek. I feel action is required. A year is long enough to come up with a plan. I think if composting is going to stay at Central, the cost of the pollution should be factored into the into their profits. Mixing water that has run through the trash just pollutes more water. Water running through the hay bales and into those shallow ponds and then mixing it with runoff water just pollutes more water. How many thousands of gallons of polluted water ran into the landfill over those 3 days? The stink of the water from that compost pond has lasted more than a week, and there's water still trickling out of that pond even today. Please take action to correct this problem or find them in violation of the zero discharge permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for hints, when you have complex messages, it really helps to get a letter ahead of time and that you will be held for 3 minutes
right in
the future. And I realize on these complex things, it's very frustrating, but put it in writing early.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your
allowance. I'm going to call on Henry Mikas from the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency and then ask for board comment. And then please identify yourself for the mic and the address. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Henry Mikas. I'm the executive director of the Sonoma County Waste Management Agency, and I thank you for allotting some time for me to speak to you. My main purpose in coming today was to give you an update on where we are with our program to achieve zero discharge out of our compost facility. As background, the Waste Management Agency is responsible for running the compost facility. We have a contract operator, Sonoma Compost Company, that does that for us. We hold a solid waste permit. We operate under a county permit for stormwater discharge, as the county is the property owner. A year ago, this board issued a waste discharge requirement to the county that had a provision asking, it was about paragraph 15, asking that the compost facility compile a plan to achieve zero discharge, and the date for the plan was May 15th, 2013. The agency got that. We hired a consulting engineer, SCS, who I'm sure you're familiar with, and they compiled that plan with input from ourselves, Sonoma Compost, the county, and the county's landfill operator, Republic Services. Over the course of the summer and fall, as with any complex technical submittal, there was a lot of back and forth between the agency, its consultants, the other people I mentioned, and your water board staff. A lot of questions, a lot of technical things were ferreted out. I don't know that that process is quite done yet, but that plan that was submitted in May is still really the only plan that we're trying to follow. In the course of those discussions, water board staff asked us to try and do some things to limit or improve the water stormwater flow off the compost site in the interim until we could achieve the aims of that plan. We have done some of those things. One of them was they asked us to institute some new best management practices. We did that in the fall before the approach of the rainy season. It involved building additional sediment traps. It involved putting straw wattles along all of our compost windrows to try and filter some of the water that came down. It involved pumping our pond out so we could have more retention. In addition, there was a discussion with water board staff about trying to do something with first flush. The thinking being that the first water that came off the site would probably have the most problem constituents, whether it was suspended solids or otherwise. We thought that was a good idea, and we again hired SCS to put together a plan on how to do that. We have drawings, we have a methodology, we've discussed that with water board staff. We had hoped back in December when that came up that we could have something working by February. When the design plans weren't quite finished, we elected to go ahead with the big storm that came at the end of February to start pumping and hauling water to the Laguna treatment plant. I need to back up and say that part of the process that went on last year through the spring and summer was knowing that we were going to have to deal with water in some way or another. We did go and get a discharge permit from the Laguna plant and set up trucking so we could start hauling. So the first flush plan was for us to try and capture the first 200,000 gallons. But in effect, what we've done for the last three rainstorms is we've hauled 1.1 million gallons of stormwater off that facility that has not discharged into the Stemple Creek. And for the three storms, it's been over 300,000 gallons per storm. And we did that, one, as a show of good faith, and two, because we did promise we'd do something by the end of February, and we felt honor-bound to try and meet our commitment to the water board and the citizens. As to the way ahead, as with anything, there's always roadblocks, stumbling blocks. The biggest problem we have with finishing a zero-discharge program is storage capacity. The compost facility is 25-plus acres that generates a lot of water. We've had analysis done to try and figure out how much water that would be. When the plan was first submitted to y'all back in May last year, there was some thought that we could use the county's leachate pipeline to haul that water. Well, it turns out the pipeline doesn't have enough capacity. So that was an idea that everybody had back a year ago that has not come to fruition. At best, they could let us take 200 gallons a minute, which doesn't add up to a whole lot when you're talking about millions of gallons of water that you get in any given storm event. We've gone through several alternatives on trying to find a storage place, and we're working with the County of Republic on a potential site now. If we can clear that up, that would really open the way for us, but it's an issue. Probably the ultimate solution to zero discharge off of that current property is for us to do a new site. I'm sure you've heard that before. That's been a process that our board and our waste management agency staff has been engaged in for several years. As it stands right now, we are considering two sites. There's been an environmental impact report that's been done. It's been final. It has not been adopted by our board. Because the choice between of the two sites is very, very complex and very challenging. One site, which we call Site 40, is east of Petaluma. It's a rural area. The positive, it's a big site. We would have room to do what we need to do. We could manage stormwater fairly easily there relative to the central site. However, it's a big property, has a big price tag, and it's got issues related to transportation. There's infrastructure now in place that takes all the organic materials, and that would be disturbed.
I'm going to ask you to sum up because okay. This is not an action item. This is
okay. Well, I wanted to brief you. Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to
I
say was
I appreciate that.
Yeah. The other alternative site was the central site. There's a place on Central Landfill that's not on trash that it's available. It has some space constraints. It's on a hillside that's rock, so expensive to construct. And there we have some real serious issues with stormwater. We've done a water analysis in a typical rainy season to try and deal with stormwater and achieve zero discharge. We're looking at having to find capacity for 14 million gallons of water. And when you look at a really rainy year, it's 29 million gallons. Not an easy answer. At our board meeting this coming week, we have a proposal to our board to look at a scope of work for engineering work to be done to assess some of the technological concerns we have on both sites, and one of the primary ones is how they handle the stormwater on the new site. We really need to have an idea how that can work. And one of the things we're talking about, when you compare to what it would take for 30 years worth of hauling and paying for treatment for excess of 14 million gallons a year, is roofing the place. So we're hoping by the end of summer to have some clarity on what's the best way to go ahead.
Okay.
So.
And again, you can always write a letter and we'll read the details. Very briefly, does staff have any comments or board members? I'll start with staff. And I remind people when things are at public forum, we're not allowed to take any formal board action. We can have discussions.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Assistant Executive Officer David Leland to elaborate, but briefly, as Mr. Mike has mentioned, we've met with them. We're in a kind of ongoing dialogue about options for achieving zero discharge, and we're in the process of finalizing a letter that we're going to be sending to the county. He says I've said it all. process of finalizing a letter that we'll be sending to the county, essentially establishing a firm deadline for achieving the zero discharge from the site to be achieved by the beginning before the rains next rainy season.
All right. Board member questions or comments?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask, though, can you remind me what that permit said? The language in that permit required zero discharge by when? What or by a plan by when?
The permit required a plan to be submitted by May the 15th of last year to achieve zero discharge. It didn't have a deadline for achieving zero discharge in it.
Can I ask again, Mr. Leland, did that plan in fact come in?
I need to identify myself, David Leland, Assistant Executive Officer. Yes, we did get a plan. It suggested a date for achieving zero discharge of October, or I think it was October of this year. And so our intent is to hold them to that.
Can I ask?
To slight variation on that. So what the schedule that they proposed was by the fall of 2014. So it didn't specify a specific date. And so in the letter that we're preparing now, it's identifying that to be achieved by October 1st.
Can I ask, too, my understanding was staff was at this facility recently and had some observations out there. Can I ask what staff saw out there and what was what's your interpretation? Because I agree with some of the comments that this is complex. I've worked on the site for 20 years as a consultant, and I've been involved in this site for a long time. So it is complex, I agree. But this has also been an ongoing problem. Can I ask Diana? You better identify yourself
Henry.
First.
Water quality staff. Yeah.
Fantastic. So you were out there recently, I understand.
We were. We were out after the first big storm and had been in back and forth discussions by letter and email for some time with Mr. Mikus and SES, and kind of refining the how can you minimize and make things a little cleaner this year while working towards zero discharge per the first plan. And Mr. Mikas had presented a number of, he'd been talking about different options, but a lot of the things that that they were initially exploring had run into a lot of obstacles, put up different permitting obstacles or challenges through the LEA or with the county or Republic, depending on just trying to get around operational and different challenges on the site. So there were a number of things that appear to be beyond the control of the compost and the Waste Management Agency to pursue on their own without cooperation. So we kind of wanted to see those things that we'd been talking about, stand on the ground and look at them, look at the ponds, talk about the first flush idea had been using Baker tanks, but that was off the table. So we were looking at the lower pond that they were talking about, and we now have a plan for damming that off and holding a 200 to 400,000 gallons of leachate. We were also talking about the efforts the compost people have been making to lower or empty the ponds before and between storms. And we looked at the BMPs that were in place at the time of our visit were some check dams towards the bottom of the lower corner of the compost area. And you know, you could see that sediment had been retained, but probably overtopped as well. And it looked like a pretty small, pretty hard to. It's a pretty big area, and pretty hard to try by just catching sediment at the bottom to be able to contain a very large percentage of it. But that's pretty much what we saw. I mean, just seeing that there were a lot of obstacles and challenges, and realizing that we were going to have to both encourage the county as the permit holder to be working closely with the Waste Management Agency, but also set a firm deadline.
And I appreciate that. Thank you. I at the same time, I realized that there's a lot of cooks in this kitchen. This is a county-owned facility that is overseen and contracted through Waste Management Authority to a private contractor that's been doing this composting for 20 years. And there's many cooks. And then the decision-making process, which is outside of this board, to determine ultimately where a new facility goes is further complicated because it's a JPA. That's an amalgamation of our cities and county. And my desire is, in fact, to find solutions here. And the reality is that this site, including the central landfill site, discharges to Stemple Creek, which is an impaired water body on its own. 303 delisted, I believe, for sediment and nutrient. This is a big compost facility. It is a major portion of our diversion and an important facility for us in Sonoma County with our AB 939 waste requirements. And yet we have a facility here that, I mean, I think it has issues for sure with design, with when I look at a stormwater conveyance system and the sizing of ponds now, the level of treatment that's being provided. I think at a very bare minimum that the October 1st date that's out here has to have resolution and teeth to it, that you have to have zero discharge from this facility next year. There was discussion in the adoption of that permit to have that pipeline be in play. In fact, the Waste Management Authority under the JPA, there was discussions, I know at the JPA meeting, which I attended, that was discussing, you know, the plumbing and the factual part of that. I realize the complications, but at the same time, there's many moving parts. And ultimately, the County of Sonoma is the owner of this facility and holder of this permit. My main question is, what is the plan? What is the plan to get to zero discharge, or what is the plan to get to a new facility? I don't control any of that, but I will put a mark down today and say that I support staff to say that October 1st is a zero discharge. The way that that permit was written was to have a plan for best management practices and implementation to control stormwater from this site about 10 months ago. It sounds like pieces and parts of this has been done. I think it's clear today that, you know, by the way, that was a 10 or 12 inch rainstorm. So it was a sizable storm. There's no doubt about it. And I believe that the way that stormwater is conveyed out of central landfill, it commingles with surface water runoff from other areas of that landfill. That's not all compost runoff right there. But nonetheless, it is discharging to Stemple Creek from a facility, and it is under permit from the state of California. So my desire is to have this fixed. And I support an October 1st date as a hard date out here to have zero discharge for next season. I would further encourage then that through this season, because we're not, I hope we're not done with rain, that if the continuation of the operation of this facility with a mindful way to get to zero discharge for any remaining storms of the remaining of this year, I think should be key. I know that you've gone to efforts, Henry, and your agency to pump water. The central landfill was in that game to pump leachate. They pumped 20 million gallons of leachate a year for many years and hauled it by truck. That's surely not a long-term solution. That cannot be cheap. And I have sympathy for that. But I think some hard decisions need to be made here, and they need to be made in a semblance of order to get to clearly, I think, what is a better facility, a better operation of a facility.
Yeah. Mr. Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I would like to simply echo at one level what Mr. Noren is saying. We adopted a permit that took a long, long time to get. It was not perfect. I think none of us would put a landfill there now if we got to a do-over, but it is there. And we have an obligation to the public. Clearly, they are here today unhappy. We have an obligation to make sure that this is curtailed, that it is corrected, that we get it done. And I would echo Mr. Noren's October 1st. It needs to stop happening. We can't continue. So I don't want to make a motion to make that happen. I would prefer to just say, no, it has to happen. Mr. Mikus, it has to be done. Because if we are back here, it's not going to be good. And I can see Ms. Henriele.
I just wanted to add, I don't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to add also that the county public works staff have been getting involved, assisting in getting leachate pumped and taken to the wastewater plant, and assisting some with the BMPs at this point. We've been talking quite a bit to, I've been talking to Glenn Morelli over the last couple of weeks, and David Leland's been talking to Susan Clausen. So I don't know if the you want to hear from the county or if the county has anything they wanted to add to what you're saying
I'm trying to get through the public session here, and I want to say we had advisements of individual board opinions because we're not allowed to give direction on this matter, so I want to make that very clear, although hopefully people heard what is of concern to some board members. And I think our remedy is if staff feels it warranted, we can bring it on the agenda early, or otherwise it'll come up on when it's regularly scheduled for their. Okay, does anyone object to that? Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate everyone for taking the time and bring it to our attention.
Thank you.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative to call back the State Board Liaison Report by Stephen Moore. And you should know, Stephen, sometimes when you're out of the room, people talk bad about you. But but in this case, I bragged up on how educational your reports are. And so now we've set a high bar for you.
Well, very nice. Thank you, Chair Corbett and members of the board. My name's Steve Moore. I'm a member of the State Water Resources Control Board and liaison to the Great North Coast region. And last time I gave my liaison report, well, certainly I want to thank you for accommodating my schedule this morning. The last time I gave my report, I think it took a full half hour. So I've sort of eaten into my time for this month. And I'm going to make mine as brief as possible and invite questions from the board and staff if you like. I always organize my talks by budget and then recent activities, upcoming activities of the State Board, and legislation that might be of interest to the North Coast region. In terms of budget, last time I went at length and I noticed it was captured in the minutes, and there aren't a lot of additions to that. The governor's 2014-2015 budget does have a lot of activity proposed for the state and regional water boards, and it hasn't changed a great deal at this point in time, except that with recognizing the state's current drought emergency, and given that it will lead to more extensive pumping of our already overdrafted aquifers to replace surface water losses, the drought emergency legislation that was signed by the governor a couple weeks ago provides funding for our effort with additional groundwater staff to begin immediately. So instead of beginning in July, we're mobilizing at the state board to deal with that. It has more to do with the groundwater quantity issues than groundwater quality issues. So it's the activity centered more in at the state board, and we're working with Department of Water Resources and stakeholders in that effort. Recently, I'd like to note that we had a great celebration meeting on March 4th about the integrated regional water management programs that State Water Board helped fund through Prop 50. And we heard from 8 out of the 10 integrated water management programs around the state, and one of them was the celebrated North Coast Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and a great effort there, and distinct in the state in terms of how it encompassed the whole region, and folks working hard at that effort, creating bridges among communities and the full North Coast region, a great expansive area. A lot of the integrated water management plans were focused more on watersheds or groundwater basins around the state. This one, so you could think of as splitting into watersheds. Here, the North Coast effort was more of a lumping exercise, but there's so much in common in terms of the water management challenges in this part of the state. And it was a great deal of effort that was completed by those participants, and $25 million worth of bond funds that the state provided, and a great deal more that was locally matched. And so we can go on the acre feet per year, you know, of water savings that occur through these programs. But it would just emphasize that this integrated water management efforts, which combine water quality, flood control, water quantity issues on a watershed basis, they really create more resiliency in our communities to have our water supply extend further into these drought cycles that will continue to happen in California. So that was great to hear about how the funding has led to some improvements in local water supply stories. But, of course, there's so much more left to do. Upcoming, last time Vice Chair Noren asked me about the industrial general permit for stormwater discharges. And it was a good question that's been, you know, ongoing process, taking a lot of time. Pleased to let you know that on April 1st, and this isn't an April Fool's joke, April 1st, we are having a hearing for adoption of the statewide industrial stormwater MPDS permit. And so we're narrowing the issues, as you're very familiar with the process, and I guess this is the fourth or fifth draft. I'm starting to lose track. Fifth, I think. So we're all relieved to get over the finish line and really start the business of our strategic work planning effort around stormwater. And incidentally, we're doing one of those efforts with groundwater, and it isn't lost on state board members or staff of our need to integrate those visions, and that stormwater is a resource, not a waste, and is something that can help with groundwater management too in many parts of the state. We're also amending the statewide stormwater permit for Caltrans and to incorporate TMDLs throughout the state. And this exercise has been iterative, time-consuming, but important because we believe we're really making progress working with Caltrans on incorporating principles of water quality and water management within transportation design. And TMDLs provides us this opportunity to really create some metrics, some performance standards for Caltrans in terms of acres of rights of way that they own and manage per year and commitments they can make to upgrade our transportation network methodically year by year to improve water quality. And sort of a proof of concept, if you will, you know, with my civil engineering background, I can see the need for them to see how this system will work. It's sort of the conservative engineer standpoint, right? But once they see it working, it becomes part and parcel, part of doing business over time. So I think we've made some real good progress. Not enough progress for some, too much for others, but that will be on our agenda coming up as well. And I touched on the drought relief legislation. I'm sure folks are interested in that. The total was $650.6 million, $650.6 million statewide. But this isn't necessarily this new money that comes out of nowhere, as you can imagine. Really, to help put this in context, $472 million of this goes to the Department of Water Resources for integrated water management programs, but that's Prop 84 money. So in essence, the drought legislation increases the burn rate for bond funding that the voters have approved. And we will target drought relief, both long-term and short-term, where possible. And you know, Department of Water Resources is leading that effort. We will work with them. But there are elements to point out, you know, pots of money, for instance, in emergency drinking water, water supply, and water quality, more for the near term, $4 million goes to our cleanup and abatement account, where we can provide interim emergency drinking water supplies for disadvantaged communities. So it's not a huge amount of money, but it's some. $7 million to the Small Community Grant Fund to the board for grants to small and severely disadvantaged communities to comply with water quality regulations, protect surface and groundwater quality, and reduce threats to public health and safety. And $2.5 million for drought-related water rights and conservation actions that state board staff will mobilize to deal with as the issues arise this year. $15 million go to the Department of Public Health for alternative water supplies and public water system improvements. If the governor's plans go through, that division of drinking water will become part of the State Water Board and will be part of our operations as of July 1st. But when we talk about near-term challenges with the drought, really it's the Office of Emergency Services in the state government that is most equipped to deal with real, you know, on-the-ground, real-time problems. One example, $1.8 million from the general fund will go to them for disaster recovery assistance to communities. So the State Water Board is not a great first responder. You know, what we're interested in is long-term drought resiliency and integrated water management investments that we can make. But if you want to talk about emergencies, which loom on the horizon for our state, the Office of Emergency Services is mobilizing to be able to get ready, and we'll do everything in our power to move funds to communities that need it. So on groundwater, it is kind of a sea change in thinking that groundwater quantity should be regulated in some way. We really continue to emphasize that it should be done at a local level, regional level, by people with local knowledge. And there's several pieces of groundwater legislation that are now in play. One of which is AB 1739 by Assemblymember Dickinson, 1739. You know, back in 2001, the Groundwater Quality Monitoring Act of 2001 required us to establish the Comprehensive Monitoring Program, you know, as GAMMA, right, the Groundwater Assessment and Monitoring and Assessment Program, GAMMA. And that's now linked to GeoTracker. So for the public that's interested in learning about groundwater, we have user-friendly tools on our mapping-based tools on our website where you can quickly get information on groundwater contamination. And so this new AB 1739 would require the State Water Board, in consultation with Department of Water Resources, to develop thresholds for the sustainable management of priority groundwater basins. So again, develop thresholds for the sustainable management of the priority groundwater basins. When we talk about thresholds, yes, there's the basin plan, you know, health-based thresholds, MCLs, maximum contaminant levels, groundwater quality objectives in your basin plan, but there's also the issue of thresholds of quantity, water levels, water table levels in different types of water years, and that is very site-specific. So that's being discussed as possible legislation. And I'm going to kind of go back to, you know, I've given reports to you all about different statewide policies that are under development, and the timeline has slipped on these. We can give, you know, I don't like giving excuses. There's things that come up like drought, but we have an ambitious schedule of statewide policy work this year. And it ranges from anti-degradation policy applied to groundwater, bacterial standards for ocean and inland surface waters, desalination, ocean plan amendments. The governor's drought declaration emphasized the need for farmers to be able to have ready access to recycled water for irrigation. So we've moved up a general waste discharge requirements for the use of recycled water for the whole state. That's now a priority for us to work on, and toxicity water quality control plan amendments are in the works, working with EPA and stakeholders. The trash water quality control plan amendments for the ocean plan and the inland surface waters plan is going to be imminently released in the next few days. We have a board hearing planned for April 22nd. April 22nd is the hearing for the proposed trash water quality control plan amendments. And last but not least, the wetlands policy, which deals with the 401 water quality certification program and creating some consistency statewide, but really emphasizing to stakeholders that we want that process to work seamlessly with the Corps 404 process, but recognizing that there are wetland resources in our state that are critically important for our sustainability, for water supply, water quality, habitat, and watershed function that are outside of the Corps' jurisdiction. And so that's where the state comes in to protect those resources. And so it's a very high priority for our board to get that policy underway this year. And with that, happy to entertain any questions.
Board Member Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Moore. You did come in less than half an hour, and it is very instructive. I think, one of the things that drought has brought on, and if you will, there's a concern, particularly when you mention the priority for recycled water, that there would be, quote, some rule bending, unquote, with respect to water quality issues as a result of drought. So could I ask you to address that and reassure everyone that water quality is not hampered by a mere little drought problem?
Yes. Well, let me assure everyone, and I think our recycled water policy creates this assurance, so you can, you know, not just take my word for it, but look at the language that we've published under statewide policy and our efforts to bring science and careful assessment of what might be in recycled water and what scientific reproducible results that we can provide and monitoring we can provide. So it's not necessarily rigorous as some might like to see it, but I would assure everyone that we have in place water recycling requirements that are based on protection of public health, and we also have in our constitution that it's prohibit the waste and unreasonable use of water. And so the concern about a shortcut for discharge requirements through recycling. We have many, many safeguards along the way to ensure that. And then conversely, you know, the State Water Board sees incredible value and resource value in wastewater, just from a water resource standpoint, but also from an energy standpoint. And so if you want to talk about, I got two words for wastewater: drought proof. Maybe I could put four words: drought proof water supply. It doesn't mean we do, you know, if you do the science on it, you can't just recycle everything in a do loop. You have to have fresh water go in, and there's a careful way to assess in each region what's the maximum you can recycle and that sort of thing. But in California, we recycle about 13 to 17% of our wastewater. In Israel, they recycle 90% of their wastewater. 13, 90. So we see a lot of potential. And a lot of times, the potential is unrealized because there's a lot of activation costs to get recycling up and running. You know, the distribution system, obviously, going into the streets and that sort of thing, but also the treatment. So we see this as an opportunity with folks interested in developing drought-proof water supplies to jumpstart investment and assist communities to get things off the ground. Whereas, like, Southern California has a great deal more infrastructure in place. Northern California can catch up a little bit, maybe, through the strategic application of these funds that have been made available.
Thank you. Mr. St. John.
Related to that, my understanding is that the State Board will be considering lowering of interest rate for loans associated with recycled water infrastructure.
I really appreciate you bringing that up. It's on the agenda coming up, where we're going to be we took a hard look at our bank account, if you will. You know, we have a super credit rating for the state revolving fund. We intend to keep it that way, but we took a hard look at how we can take a certain amount of that funding and use a lower interest rate to create an incentive that's financial and to assist communities that are in financial stress to have a lower interest rate and a longer repayment period. So we talk about the dials we can turn at the State Water Board to try to facilitate the movement of these funds to get projects in the ground. So we're looking at that seriously on March 18th. So thanks for reminding folks. You know, and also, I mean, while I'm at it, this Friday, I wanted to commend Matt St. John for working with the Central Valley Regional Board on the marijuana cultivation challenges and participating in an effort led by the Central Valley there to get underway, to catch up to the North Coast in terms of the leadership you provided on that complex and important issue. So thanks for spending your time to coordinate with the Central Valley Board up in Redding.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Steve, two quick things. I like the stormwater permit. Thank you for that, by the way. Thanks for the work at the State Board and the staff. You know, I've been working on the 9703 permit for, if I'm doing the math right, what is that, 17 years?
I worked on that, now that you mention it. Yeah, back in 98. Yeah, 99.
Nice step up. My only request is at this time is that I like your word to integration. I think that it's an important tool to integrate all the way up to MS4, our industrial stormwater. It goes well with our construction stormwater. I think that's great. I really appreciate those connections. At the same time, my request would be, and I've heard from some others out and about in the world, to have outreach and training to the greater wide world out there, the regulated community of the coming, and I assume this is in your work plan, kind of rollout of this thing, mm-hmm. and the implementing agencies as well.
Okay.
There is some new stuff in there. It does change the world a bit, I think, for the better myself. And it's a nice job. I want to say that. Second thing is I'm interested because I've seen on the LIRIS site that the temporary change petitions and some of that type of drought declaration mm-hmm. Stuff. And more locally, we've had some movement on recycled water and this kind of idea that the drought declaration changes the premise of WDRs and some of that kind of thing. And I would ask, is the... In the motion of an ongoing drought declaration and the ramping up of things, is there a legal premise or a legal contemplation of what a drought declaration does to regulatory for regional boards? And what does it do to WDRs? What does it do to water rights? And I know that's a huge question, but we are in a time of a crunch right now. And I'm interested, has there been something, opinion legally out of state office of chief counsel as Governor Brown is, ramping up in response to the ongoing drought? Mm-hmm. And what does that do to us regulatorily wise, in some of our ongoing and programs that we have?
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't just put all the rules in abeyance.
Right.
But there was in the emergency drought relief legislation, there were some specific authorities that were specified, and there's a lot of it related to the state water board. As I look through here,
well, and by the way, just in the interest of time, if there is such information, could you maybe forward it through maybe our executive officer, and we could disseminate it that way, that just as a better understanding, because there's some ideas out here that I think are interesting, but yet I'm not so sure they're based in fact or legality. And so I'm trying to just get a better understanding of, as things change, how does the bigger world change?
Yeah. I didn't see anything jump out at me as far as regional board authorities getting, lessened or heightened and that sort of thing. There was specificity about state water board authorities in the drought, and it relates more to the issues of curtailment of water rights and these kind of things. And it's very specific. There's a 3-page fact sheet that our legislative analyst, Rob Eagle, put together that I was working from that I'll just email to Matt St. John.
Fantastic.
It's very informative. But, we're not in a situation where we're putting – giving a free pass over existing systems. That's all intact.
Right, and I believe that as well. The thing is, I think it helps us understand me personally, and then I think also it helps the regulated community and some of the ideas that are floating around out here about this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you had would be helpful.
Yeah, and then the temporary urgency change petitions, that is an example.
That's a word.
And what I talked about last time about the Sonoma County one that we approved. And it had to do with saving water for later. I mean, really very simple concept that we need to have these waters extend our water supply through the dry period this year and being creative about that so that we can maximize beneficial uses across the board.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay.
Any other board member comment? I just had one very quick one. I just want to thank the State Board again for leading on groundwater. And I think when you come up with a program, then at that time, you'll be of great aid to the state legislature to sort of catch up to what's happening on the ground.
Appreciate it a lot. No, thanks. I see the importance of it. I did testify to the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife Committee on Tuesday this week to go over the concept paper that we released. We had, as I said last time, the work plan in January, or the workshop in January. And just, it's real important for us to work really closely with locals to figure out the right fit to assist them to really get the job done at the local level.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Next card is Matt Green. And Matt, you use different ways you do an E on a single public request. So the most variety I've ever seen in my life.
As a son of a teacher, my mother would be embarrassed. Matt Green, I am a licensed forester here on behalf of CLFA. I just wanted to take a brief second and realize that the waiver is coming up for discussions in the next couple months. As part of that discussion, I would hope that after 10 years of collecting and submitting data, forest landowners have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars collecting this data, that data is presented as part of the timber discussion on how effective and how good a job we're doing out there, and looking at comparing the data with what CAL FIRE has presented as part of their 4-prime monitoring, because I'm getting tired of these discussions about we feel instead of this is what the data suggests. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your comment. Next card is Rosamund Crowder, And then if we could have ready to go Ellen Drill, and after that, Jason Perburco. Oh, okay.
Rosamond Crowder from Willits, and I'm speaking about the Willits Bypass. I would like to thank the staff for the excellent review of our meeting. It is clear they understand our concerns and our requests. I would like to bring to your attention a specific part of the report. It says, quote, Caltrans is currently proposing to complete all mitigation installation approximately 2 years after completion of construction due to delays in securing mitigation contracts. This proposed delay is so vastly different from the promises given in both the state and federal mitigation plans as to reflect an enormous temporal loss. Both the 404 and the 401 are based on timelines where the bulk of mitigation installation is completed during the first year of construction, which was 2013. The proposed schedule has mitigation installation unspecified and dragging on into 2019. Staff has been keeping us informed of the progress of the meetings about the mitigation plan, but nowhere is there any discussion of temporal loss or of what Caltrans might do to compensate for it. The only request that has been made to Caltrans is to, quote, update the text and mitigation schedule to reflect the current situation as appropriate. Simply updating the text is not appropriate. It invites Caltrans to make another hollow promise. Staff understands temporal loss and the need to compensate for it, as they so eloquently reported. Nevertheless, the January 15th letter says that the schedule must show completion by the end of construction. This is already an enormous concession, yet the letter says nothing about a need for additional mitigation or avoidance as we propose. The delays in securing mitigation contracts has to do with money. It was clear that mitigation would be delayed when the construction money was allocated and the mitigation money was not. That was March of 2012. That would have been a good time to evaluate the degree of delay. In October of 2013, the low bid came in 3 times higher than the money allocated. That would have been another good time to evaluate the temporal loss and begin confronting Caltrans with it. Doing that now, possibly less than 3 weeks before trucks are set to roll, and while staff is under intense pressure to approve the mitigation plan, calls for drastic measures. A cease and desist order is the only mechanism likely to allow time to negotiate a solution. The issue of the temporal loss and the option of avoiding 20 to 30 acres of wetlands must be on the table now. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to ask staff a question. I had heard, and I want you to confirm either way, whether notice of violation did go out to Caltrans.
That's correct. We, division chief of our non-point source division, sent a notice of violation, or maybe it went under your signature, David, from Fred Blatt to Caltrans, notice of violation for violations of their permit associated with the February storms.
And then just so everyone knows, that limits quite a bit what anyone can talk about, because that's subject to review. But it's a positive event from your standpoint that a notice of violation has gone out. We will introduce you're Ellen Drill. Drill?
Yes, my name is Ellen Drell, and I'm also speaking on the Willits Bypass.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to just briefly talk about the issue of temporal loss. It sounds so antiseptic that way, but actually, as you all probably know, temporal loss is actually ongoing damage to state and federal protected wetlands and fish for which there is no mitigation. And what that means on the ground for us, I mean, I showed pictures of it last month when we were here, but, and this notice of violation is another example of what this temporal loss means. You know, up to 60 acres of previously functioning seasonal wetlands are now covered with fill or compacted in some way so that they can no longer be absorbing this precious rainfall that we're getting. They're no longer for purifying that rain or storing it or recharging the ground table. That's loss for which there is no mitigation. There are hundreds, thousands of linear feet of stream banks that have been cleared of vegetation, and the erosion controls have failed. There is no mitigation for that, and it's ongoing. There is likely take of steelhead and coho that were seen in Hale Creek, which was the object of the notice of violation this last week. Outlet Creek has the longest remnant run of coho salmon in the state of California. It's on the brink of extinction. It's possible that the failure of Caltrans' best management practices on Hale Creek in February will eliminate that run of coho in the upper Outlet Creek Basin. I mean, these are real and potentially catastrophic losses, and these are all in the category of temporal losses. So they must be compensated. Caltrans can't be allowed to skate on causing these temporal losses through their failure to take mitigation seriously and make it a real priority and have their schedule in place and their plans in place and their actual mitigations in place concurrent with construction, which was what they promised back in 2010. Usually, if there is temporal loss, the permitting agencies, the regulatory agencies, require more mitigation. We know that in this situation, that is impossible. Caltrans is having a hard enough time coming up with the mitigation that it already promised to do. However, this situation is unique in that there's still an opportunity to force Caltrans to reduce impacts. And that's a proposal that we have made to your staff, and they have heard us, and they included that proposal as a serious proposal in their report to you. And I'm here today to offer further support for that proposal, and I want to explain to you just very briefly what it is. On page 2 of the staff report, there was a picture of this. This is an enlargement. This is a picture of the northern interchange of the bypass. This is the plan. This was the original 2006 Phase 1 plan. You can see this light green area is all jurisdictional wetlands, a protected ecosystem, one of the most endangered ecosystems in California. It does not have to be filled, and it's not yet filled. And our proposal is that instead of allowing Caltrans to go forward with this interchange, which is really designed for four lanes of traffic, and Caltrans isn't even going to build four lanes of traffic, that the Water Board, along with the other agencies, require Caltrans to return to this interchange plan as a way of reducing impacts. And I want to just show you a few other pictures to demonstrate.
You're really out of time, so you need, okay. I'll give you a sentence.
Okay, great. Here's the sentence will be in my pictures. This is what that interchange looks like today after these rains. It is still very much a wetland, and this goes from the southern part of the interchange all the way through here. So I just want to show you these pictures. I guess you can see them from here. There's plenty of standing water in those areas. It is possible to not fill these wetlands and still have a functional project to reduce the impacts and to compensate for the temporal loss that is ongoing right now.
Thank you. And then on, I'm calling Jason Perburco, but I also want William Ray on call, and then Brenda Alderman. Identify yourself and proceed. Yes.
Good morning. My name is Jason Perburco. I'm a forester working under the jurisdiction of this board in Trinity County. I'm here today to ask under public forum for a request of this board that prior to looking or the next board meeting in Fortuna, if this board could hold a public workshop forum on the waiver that's going to come up for discussions, preferably with board attendance. It's been my experience having attended many of the Board of Forestry Forest Practices committee meetings that many of the issues that we deal with in debate between the board and staff and the regulated public can be easily dealt with if we can get everybody together in a room and have a dialogue and conversation. When we're dealing with some of these complex policy issues and regulatory components, the inability to have dialogue and interchange and limiting your comments to 3 minutes is not always the best way to develop a progressive policy that works together to fix common goals. So with that, that's the end of my statements in public forum. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I'll ask staff, and then I have a comment.
Well, I wanted a clarification, Jason. This is Matt St. John. So you're asking for a board workshop or a staff workshop specific to the waiver?
Well, we've had both. I think that there was great success when we were working on the NTMP waiver turned GWDR, and there was a lot of progress that was made through that engagement. I do realize that the waiver is only a 5-year document, but the one thing that I see different from the way that policy and regulations develop with this board versus the Board of Forestry, especially pertaining to forest practice type rules, is that there's no dialogue and exchange with the board members who are making the decision, and they're not present, where in comparison to the Board of Forestry, the Forest Practices Committee is made up of the board members, and they are engaged in the dialogue so that they have a better understanding of what they're voting on, rather than just reading staff reports and public comment letters. And I think this is a fairly complex issue moving forward, especially given that every other regional board in the state operates their entire timber program off a simple waiver.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any comments, Matt? I just had one policy consideration. The board, I think, has made it very clear to staff, whether it's an extension of an existing waiver or not, we do not want to have the situation where there's no coverage of a waiver because of expiration. And I believe everyone, whether you're in industry or not, would have, or on the environmental side, all have an interest in making sure there's some coverage. So I don't know what will happen in regard to your proposal, although I'll certainly discuss it with the executive director. But I did want to, and I want to thank you for coming and suggesting it, but I did want to set down that guideline that we have to do it where we have something, coverage, or otherwise it, well, we had one state board decision that was going to reverse a regional board decision that did that, and it would have caused chaos in the industry. So we've learned our lesson. We don't want to go there. And thank you for your comment, and we'll see what we can do.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Just to echo on that, I'd like to remind our board that Mr. Green and Mr. Proberco also encouraged this to happen when the NTMP waiver was adopted, and noting that the waiver was coming.
Yeah.
And there's been some time, and we haven't been engaged in doing anything, although there really hasn't been any action for us to do that. But just as a reminder, I support what they say. I think the engagement is good. We did have success with the NTMP process, and I would welcome participation in a workshop to work through this as they suggested. All right. Thank you.
Given that comment. So our staff has reached out to the working group that we used during the NTMP process, as well as a larger audience, and did not get a lot of response. We provided a working draft for comment and didn't get much comment on that. So this is new to hear that there's interest in having a workshop. We were planning to bring it to the board as a hearing at the May meeting, but I will talk with our staff and consider delaying the hearing and having a workshop.
Thanks.
All right. William Ray. Brenda Edelman, and then after that, Mad Strong. Please be prepared.
Morning. William Ray from Willits on the Bypass. I'll read a short statement. The history of this project makes it clear that Caltrans never had a practical concept to mitigate environmental damage incurred by their bypass. Instead, the Caltrans EIR mitigations, quote unquote, were a paper notion by which to convince the regulatory agency, including you, to buy the plan. Our impression is borne out by the fact that the $12 million budget for mitigation of water quality is less than one-third of only the initial cost. Caltrans will never restore 2,000 acres of supposed neglected wetlands. They're actually dry farming and grazing lands. A puddle in a field is not a wetland. This is bogus, bamboozle, flim-flam, So the 62 required mitigations did not begin either before, during, or after the 2013 excavations. There is no plan. There was no funding beyond buying up farmland. Your staff has voluminous cause to declare the permit void and to cease and desist. But it's unlikely to without your leadership, and you're reluctant to make a ruling in the middle of a project. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking, and there's every likelihood that a mitigation that was never practical, possible, sincere, or funded will never happen, but that you'll tolerate the pressure being put on you to cooperate with a huge, interest-heavy state agency that's in big trouble now. Your mandate is water. Caltrans channeling off of tens of millions and perhaps hundreds of millions of gallons of valley water needed for our groundwater and aquifers is guaranteed if this project continues, because water is pulled to the Caltrans culvert system. Caltrans' big lie to justify big roads is proven not just by their falsehood that only a four-lane freeway would be funded by the FHA, but by the new claim to the public that only 30 acres of wetlands would be destroyed. It's 82 in the EIR, 73 already leveled. If you call Caltrans bluff on this dishonest, destructive project, you may get some heat. But you have ample justification in law, and you are mandated to protect the water quality of this region of the state of California. Wetlands are a high priority, but not in the little valley of Willits.
Good morning, Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I want to touch on a few items. First of all, I heard two board members saying they were meeting with people in West County over wastewater issues, and I want to ask to be part of any dialogues you have on this topic. I've been working closely on wastewater issues in West County, especially the Lower River, for 35 years, and I have an article in the local Gazette on the spill in Guerneville, and yet I had a meeting with one of the staff and brought the issue up, and there really wasn't much information available, but I just want you to know that I want to be part of the process, and I'm sorry I didn't bring articles with me, but at any rate, you can read my concerns in that. In regards to wastewater irrigation, this is a topic of deep concern to me. Tertiary is not the same as much of the wastewater being produced in Southern California, which is subject to reverse osmosis and really removes a lot more of the residual toxins that are in the wastewater. And yet I'm getting the sense that the state is feeling comfortable that they're that the Department of Health Services, which basically address more of issues around pathogens and not toxins, and the whole issue of low-dose impact of endocrine-disrupting chemicals has been being given short shrift by the state, that I've tried to, during the recycled water policy process, I have submitted all kinds of extensive studies and information. I have a whole packet of things right here indicating that very low doses of a large range of chemicals do cause major problems with the endocrine system. And there's legislation being proposed to authorize giving this by Mark Levine, AB 2071, that proposes giving tertiary wastewater to dairy cows and various livestock. And I went to a meeting in Petaluma a couple weeks ago, and many of the people there, if not most of them, had reservations about doing this, and yet I hear the state is really putting pressure on a lot of people around here to move forward with this because of the concern about drought. And I can understand that reaction, but I'm also concerned that this whole issue of low-dose impacts is not being given adequate attention. And the other thing is the focus is on public health, and nobody's talking about what this does to environmental health and all the little creatures and big creatures and wildlife that need to also use this water and how it's affecting them. We're hearing more and more about...
You need to finish up.
Okay, well, you've heard this message from me before, so I won't go any further, but I could say a lot more. And I just hope... I appreciate, Mr. Massey, that you brought up that issue, and I just hope the state will give this very careful consideration before moving forward, because once those things are in place, they're going to stay in place. It's much easier now to pay attention to this issue before all these things are in place. Thank you very much.
I just want to assure you, every time I read an article on the subject, your name and vision comes to my mind. So,
can I say one more real quick thing? And quick, and that is that I've been studying the reports on irrigation in Sonoma County, and I'm finding a lot of reasons to be concerned, and I'm going to be preparing my own report on some of the inadequacies of the reporting on wastewater overflows by people who are irrigating, especially in the urban areas.
We'll look forward to that in writing. Thank you.
Hello, board members and staff. My name is Madge Strong. I am active in a number of organizations in Willits, as well as being a city council person. And I'm speaking about the Willits bypass. First, I wanted to point out two things in the staff report. We really appreciated that staff report. It does go a long way to acknowledge the concerns that we've been raising for quite a while. The first thing is it says that they told us that Caltrans may need to implement avoidance or minimization or to mitigate for any delay in mitigation implementation. So obviously there has been an enormous delay in mitigation, and what I think is object to in that sentence is the word may need to. They must mitigate for the damage that started last year and won't be corrected with any kind of mitigation meaningfully for another 6 or 7 years. So they must implement some kind of avoidance or mitigation. And then it says a little bit below that that we, your staff, would consider the possibility of avoidance as compensation for mitigation delays, and that a scaled-down northern interchange would be considered if appropriate. So this is really the crux of the matter. The reason that we're calling for a cease and desist is not only because there's very adequate violations that justify that, but it's the only way to stop them from continuing to do the Northern Interchange as planned on their four-lane freeway plans. And that's really the only compensation left that could help compensate. So the first point there is if appropriate. I recently had an exchange of correspondence with Charlie Fielder of the District 1 office. I've sent a copy to Matt St. John of that, and it is, in our view, totally appropriate. It's right in the plans. They can do that roundabout. It's right there. They just have to eliminate a four-lane freeway interchange that is very unlikely to ever be funded or certainly is not needed. And again, as Bill Way pointed out, it was based on a lie to begin with that they needed to build a four-lane freeway. And so it is appropriate, and the way to force Caltrans to the negotiating table and implement something that's really ultimately reasonable and really should have been done with the initial permit is to stop them from what they're continuing to do, which is destroying the wetlands and our local water supplies and recharge without compensation for a very long period of time. Thank you. And was there any questions? And I would like to ask, sorry, my one question is if Caltrans does not scale back the Northern Interchange, what other compensation will you be asking from them for all of the temporal losses and violations that they've already incurred.
You need to direct those to me, and then I'll ask staff to do it. But we got to
okay.
Keep
all right.
Order.
Thank you. I would really appreciate that. Thank you.
And before I call on staff, I did want to. I hope the group recognizes we've heard you and we've acknowledged, and we were reviewing the relationship with Caltrans, but which is a serious matter, is made more serious by your testimony. And staff has taken preliminary notice of that violation. And also, we tried very hard, even though it's out of our jurisdiction, to make sure the State Water Resource Control Board, Water Rights Division, heard you on the water rights issue and some other things. So I do hope you feel acknowledged and heard. Whether our actions are satisfactory, that's something else, but I do want to give you that assurance. Does staff want to answer that question or not?
Just to say that we are in communication with Caltrans about our concerns related. This is a new communication, separate from our previous communications, related to the delays in mitigation, and asking for them to consider various options to address the delays in mitigation. Identifying one option is the potential redesign of the Northern Interchange, but also looking for opportunities for mitigation at other locations throughout the watershed.
And I hope we have an expedited negotiation process with them.
It's daily.
Yes. Okay, I'd like to call Robin Leeler, Alan Levine, John Wagonette, and then Alex Harder.
Good morning. I'm Robin Leeler from Willits Bypass. I want to thank the board for being so welcoming of public comments. This agency is so responsive, and I thank you for that. I also want to commend your staff. Yesterday's Willits News shows that they are doing their job and continuing to monitor and reprimand Caltrans as Caltrans continues to destroy wetlands. They are destroying creeks, salmon runs, water quality left and right. They are pumping water from underground wells while the rest of us are under strict rationing. I've spoken before about the impact of 55,000 wick drains on 40 acres of wetlands, so I won't repeat that. But the planned destruction will be irreversible. It is not too late to remove those wick drains and let the 30 to 40 acres revert to wetlands. After the last rain, I drove north of Willits. I could see the lake filling up again as it does every winter. In a few weeks, Caltrans is poised to resume fill operations and destroy those wetlands forever. They'll be filling the wetlands 20 to 30 feet deep with soil. They'll be squeezing all the water out and creating an impermeable dam that prevents recharge of groundwater. I am here again to show my support to your staff as they hold Caltrans to a no-net loss of wetlands. The governor is calling for a restoration of wetlands right now, and yet we face the planned destruction of more than 50 acres with no concern on Caltrans's part about how this loss impacts groundwater recharge. Please halt this part of the bypass until the water quality of this ancient seasonal lake can be protected. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan Levine. Levine, I'm sorry. Boy, I'm on a...
Goes either way. Hi, Alan Levine from Coast Action Group in Point Arena. And I want to speak to you about the timber WDR, for timber harvest WDR. I was on the NTMP working group, the only environmental advocate on the group. It's all RPFs and CAL FIRE. We can include your agency and environmental supporter. I just want to let you know another perspective of what's going on here. When Jim Burke came up with the idea of a waiver for that WDR, I said, why are you going to all this work? Because nobody's going to use it. It's more restrictive than the WDR. And he said, well, I think that there's some people it would be easier for, and if they want to do the waiver, I want to let them have that flexibility. And okay, that sounds reasonable. However, what I hear from the people that want a workshop, they didn't comment to Jim in any negative way. Nothing's come up till today. And I see this as sort of a diversion or a waste of time. I hate to be opposed to another process, but I think what they want out of it is a relaxation of the previous waiver. And I don't think that can happen. That's backsliding. We don't do that here, do we? So I'm saying that I don't really see a big utility in this, but if you want to go forward with it, I just want you to know that the waiver will probably not be utilized that much, and I don't even know if there's real utility in the waiver. Okay, thanks.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Levine, I hope many, many people saw the front page of yesterday's PD with a picture of Leslie Dahlhoff. Many of you may not know who Ms. Dahlhoff was or is. She's the former mayor of Point Arena, and she is an alumni of this board. The guaranteeing of 1,600 or 1,700 acres, depending on whose account you are reading, that protects it forever in the Point Arena area is not only Ms. Dahlhoff, but many, many other groups, including Coast Action, that brought this to the fore. We have protected 1,600 acres of the California coast. Thank you, sir.
A lot of people should be thanked. Leslie Dahlhoff, who worked hard on this, representative, I'm having trouble with his name, from Mr. Huffman, and also Mike Thompson had Oar in the Water, and Marita Watley, and they all worked really hard on this. And I'm pretty happy that touches my property, the National Monument. So I'm right next door to it, and if anybody wants to buy a ranch, come to me, because I'm a little too old to manage it. I want you to know we have
They buy a neighbor too?
Right. There are 7 miles of public owned beach there now with trails, and it's a beautiful spot. And if you like to surf, it's a good place too. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. John Wagonette. Alex Harder, and then Thomas Fristo.
Can I switch with Mr. Harder,
please? If he's agreeable. Okay.
Okay. So, hello. My name is Alex Harder. I'm from the Little Lake Valley, and that's Mendocino County. So, I came to offer a little advice I'd given to Madge Strong of the city council there about saving water. It was that wastewater is useful. Wastewater in a wetland, anywhere it can naturally recharge the groundwater, if it can handle it, it is a good place for it. That's why you want wetlands. Israel, for example, it can afford desalinization plants with massive budgets for hydroelectricity, essentially, of converting salt water into potable water. Now, the other part of it is we have, this is what I get for waking up early. So, I'll move on from saving water, which we all do here. So the problem with the mandate you guys have is it's a great mandate. It's essentially reuse, reduce, and recycle. Okay, so here's how I look at that. You have to avoid. You're basically reducing your usage when you are Oh, there's a clock. What do you know? Cool. Okay, so the problem I have with the three R's that we've been applying recently is mitigation is basically designed to recycle the land, or the water even. I don't know if you can recycle it directly through artificial wetlands, but that's a matter of opinion. As for trying to reduce the impact, you're trying to avoid it from happening. That's part of the goal. And if you're trying to minimize that, that to me accomplishes reduction. If you can actually accept that if you're doing all three steps, you're covering your bases, then thanks for that oversight. Now, the problem I have with Caltrans, it makes it hard to think about the agency, is not that it's got the eighth biggest budget on earth and nobody can rationally deal with them, but it's because their job is essentially to be a bureaucratic agency which has no political oversight of it. Now, usually politicians, though, are known for lies. So here's where we have to get into the bureaucracy itself that tells lies. The littlest lie they tell is things like you can build a British-style roundabout here and just make it bigger and use that for a freeway when you actually don't even need it to be very large whatsoever. Now, the other problem they have on the biggest scale is induced demand. And the bigger you build something, if you build it, they will come. It's the Field of Dreams mantra. And it works out, except when it doesn't work out. It is a gamble. And gambles don't consistently pay off.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, board, staff, I'm John Wagonette from Willits. I'm a lifetime Willits resident. I'd like to add a moment of levity with, but it's serious levity. So we'll get it under the 3 minutes. I'm going to read this thing, and then I have a group of people who want to help me out a little bit. We want to thank you today for truly listening to our many concerns. And this includes the people from Willits who went before me. The opportunity before you to truly make a difference for wetlands is great. And it is an opportunity we know you take very seriously. The Willits Wetlands has suffered unimaginable loss from the Willits Bypass Project. And although much of that loss cannot be truly restored, there is still time to save approximately 30 acres of the wetlands from permanent destruction. If the project, by the way, that's right across from my property. I've been watching it firsthand, and I watched areas flood that have never flooded before because of what they've done already. If the project were now stopped and properly reevaluated, it is important for so many reasons, not just for the people, but especially for all those that you have not yet heard from. The wetlands are essential for local wildlife, and today we have brought their chorus here to sing for you. So thanks for listening to their voices, and I believe my valley and wetland buddies are about to make a small performance.
Fire! thank you. Thank you for putting up with us.
Okay, thank you.
Give our little creatures a chance okay. to have their say.
Thank you. I believe, is there anyone else that has a public comment? Are you Thomas Fristo? Okay, I'm sorry. Although, remember, you got to compete with performance there. So,
I'll do my best. I want to thank the board for your attention to this matter and for you taking into account our concerns. Thomas Fristo from Willits. Caltrans has made a number of promises and agreements, and there's one thing that's been running a theme that's run through the whole thing is they have not kept these agreements, they have not kept these promises. They've asked for extensions, they want waivers, and they've been granted for the most part. They have a mitigation plan which is unfunded at this point. The lowest bid came in at three times what Caltrans had budgeted for mitigation, and they've asked for waivers to extend it beyond the point when the destruction is long past. Then they promise that they're going to take care of it. They've made repeated promises and deadlines, as I said. A prime example is the rains that we experienced last month, and which are hopefully ongoing. It turned winter in Northern California, and lo and behold, it rained. You know, most of us were grateful. Caltrans apparently was surprised. So the barriers, the berms that they were required to put to protect the streams caved in, overwhelmed, like the Ninth Ward, and maybe they were poorly designed, maybe they just weren't compacted adequately, but however, they failed. I'd like to point out at this time that the streams of Little Lake Valley are the terminal point, the end point, of the longest coho salmon run in Northern California. Salmon and steelhead, which are spawn in these streams, they're endangered federally and state declared endangered. This happens every year. The streams fill up. It rains. The streams fill. The salmon come to spawn. And if there's an inflow of mud, it smothers the eggs, and there are no salmon. This is what is happening now in this valley. They're being totally overwhelmed. The streams are turning into mud holes. I'm just kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing. But this is just one example of Caltrans' ineptitude and, if I may say so, duplicity. It kind of reminds me of trying to get my kids to clean up their room, you know? It's what I call the yeah buts. Yeah, I'm going to do it, but... then I go in to check, and they've picked up three pairs of dirty socks, and there's still a pile of gym clothes moldering in the corner, you know? And now Caltrans has promised to mitigate all the damage they're doing here. But later, Daddy, I've got to do this first, you know? First, I have to make all the destruction.
And you after need the to finish up your time.
Okay.
Up. Okay.
And after
you.
The destruction, I guess what I want to really say in the end is like I would say to my kids, stop trashing the joint and clean up your mess.
Thank you. Okay, I believe I'm going to take about a 15-minute break. We'll start back at 10:30.